MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story. One passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the first time I put a record out was when the collapse of music happened. And we worked up from there.
Welcome to Midnight Chats, a podcast of laid-back conversations with leading names in music. In keeping with these informal interviews, each new one is published weekly at midnight. This week's episode is hosted by me, Greg Cochran, from Loud and Quiet magazine. Thanks for joining me on Midnight Chats. Tonight, my guest is Tor Marise, better known as the artist Billy Nomates. Despite the pandemic turning the world on its head in 2020, it was still a breakout year for Billy Nomates, who released her self-titled debut album last August. She followed that up with a brilliant EP, Emergency Telephone, that came out in March of this year. Signed to Invader Records, the label co-founded and run by Jeff Barrow from Portishead and Beak, Billy Nomates was speaking to me a couple of weeks ago from Invader HQ in Bristol, where she spent the last couple of months writing and demoing and recording material for a new album. I've really felt for all musicians and the wider music community the past 18 months with everything going on, but particularly newer artists, the situation has taken away a lot of opportunities for them, getting in front of real life crowds being the obvious one. But we talk a bit about that, and great to hear that she wants to reclaim the experience of her debut album before moving on to what comes next. So thank you again to Billy Nomates for taking the time out on what was a very hot day to record this episode, and enjoy some chat about everything from relearning basic social skills again as society opens back up like we all are doing, right through to Iggy Pop and his fandom of Billy Nomates. So let's get into it. This is Midnight Chats number 110, where my guest is Billy Nomates. I kind of feel bad about sort of dragging you away to speak on our podcast on the day where it's like sweltering hot, but I don't feel awful, because I can see that where I'm speaking to you from is in the studio, so you are hard at work. You're in the den. You're not out there in the sunshine today, right?
I'm shielding from it. Yeah, no, it's really, I'm at Invader Studios where I'm writing, and it's very nice and cool in here. I don't know if they've got an AC system, but it's like the air is conditioned. Like I say, you could put a jacket on and you'd be all right, which is, I guess, on the mean streets it's not that way, right?
Exactly. That's too true. What are you like in the heat generally? Do you run away from it, or do you quite like it hot.
Do actually prefer a hot climate, but there's something about being in a city and being in the UK where it's just disgusting. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I think it's the proximity to other people, isn't it?
Yeah. Like,
that makes it a whole lot worse, doesn't
like
it?
When it's like a hot pavement outside Poundland, you just go, get me out of this hell. But if you're abroad and it's like 30 degrees, it's fine. know.
Yeah. I must admit, one thing that I really haven't missed, I know the start of the pandemic, I mean, this is really sort of clutching at straws given just how serious the whole situation has been. I didn't miss those like really sweaty train journeys or bus journeys where you've got no choice, where you're just kind of, you just close your eyes because you're so close to somebody you don't know. That's just, you know, everybody's sweating profusely on a day like this. To begin with,
that was the thing. I was just like, this is great. I didn't like people next to me or anywhere near me. And now it's like, oh, great. And then it kind of went a long time and I was like, do you remember when he used to sweat next to you?
Did you get nostalgic for sweaty strangers?
A little bit. I think if we were being honest, we all did.
Yeah, it's true.
Did we?
In a gig context, definitely. Like, I would have given anything at points to just be in a crowd at a gig. But on the sort of number 175 bus from Walthamstow Central to Chingford at 5:30 on a Tuesday, I still don't miss it.
No, you're right. It's a different dynamic.
Yeah, it's true. So hey, I can see that obviously you're in the studio, like around you I can see like mic stands and leads and everything else. Like, presumably you are hard at work writing new music. What's going on at the moment? Are you sort of doing, you know, full shifts in the studio writing new material? What's happening right now?
It's Jeff kind of just giving me a space, really, which has been very kind of him. Mm-hmm. They're kind of hard at work working on soundtrack stuff and in the big control room. And then behind me, you might be able to see, but for the purpose of the podcast, behind me there's a drum booth where I've kind of set up my drum machines and my guitars and bits and pieces. And I've kind of just been coming in every day in the evenings and just chipping away at basically the new album, which has been amazing. And I'm incredibly grateful for the space because normally I'd just write an album in a cupboard.
Well, I was going to say, so in the past, the first record was written at your sister's kitchen table, is that right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And then the second one was written in a sort of family bedroom living with your dad, is that right?
Yeah.
So you're used to basically looking around you and going, right, well, this is where I'm going to be working.
What have I got? And and Jeff kind of said sort of April time, he was like, well, there's no one really, they're doing some sessions, but it's like, there's no one really here, you can hide away and do that. So it's incredible. I mean, the only kind of thing is that you just feel like you need to be super productive because now it's like, well, I've been given this amazing space. So you better write your best work. But I've got over, I mean, that's how I felt to begin with. And now I'm really over that. I'm really not thinking that way anymore. I've been here long enough to just go, you turn up, you see what happens. Maybe you go home. Maybe you come back later. That's it now. And you feel at home. Like, to begin with, it's always, whenever I used to come here, I was always a little bit intimidated because it's a big fancy studio.
And like, great records have been made there.
Great
and like
records.
Jeff and the Invader label's history is obviously, you know, notable. And so there's just a whole sort of aura that goes with that, right?
Totally, yeah. And I always feel it the first few weeks I'm here, I always feel that. And then you kind of start slipping into it and you go, oh, hang on, no, it's cool, relax. Like, you're here doing stuff and, you're supposed to be here.
Oh, absolutely,
you know, because it takes a minute. You know, I'm constantly like, why am I here? Why me? You know,
do you feel like you still have a sort of a certain amount of sort of it's sort of imposter syndrome almost, isn't it? That's what people call it when they don't feel like they're in the situation that, you know, that they don't feel, you know, that they should be there for some reason. But like, you absolutely do. Like, of course you deserve to be there writing new music. Like, but yeah, you can't help that. It's a little voice in the back of your head sometimes, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I think it's everything, everyone must have it to a degree. And maybe it's weird if you come in and you go, yep, yeah,
this is my lever chair,
I'm captain of this ship. You know, you just come in and you go, shit, here we go. And but I've kind of, you know, I've been here for about 7 or 8 weeks now, and you just learn that you have good days and bad days, and some days just don't work at all, and sometimes you need to come in late at night, sometimes you need to come in first thing in the morning, and that's just the nature of it. Yeah, and that it's okay to feel a bit impostery. Like, yeah, I think if I felt ultra confident, like, it wouldn't be good. Do you know what I mean? It wouldn't. It would be like, oh, hang on, Billy, or whatever your name is. You know.
What's the experience like the last, well, I suppose it's been a couple of years since you've got to know Jeff and the Invader team. Like, is there like a kindred spirit? How do you get on? I mean, obviously they were admirers of your music to work with you and you know, release through the label, but how do you get on with them as people? It sounds like they're giving you like the time and space to do your thing in the studio at the moment, but outside of that, you know, when you go for a drink or something, what's it like?
Oh, it's great. Like, I just consider Jeff and Stu and everyone, I just consider everyone friends. As much as I work with them, I just like them as people, and hopefully it's vice versa. But yeah, they're just cool. They're just, maybe there's a kindred spirit thing going on. I'll just chat with them about anything and everything. And it's getting to that point now, especially after the last year, where, and especially sort of coming in every day being like, hi, I'm here. I don't know.
It's like if I let myself in, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much there now.
Does anybody want an ice cream? I'm going to the shop.
That's pretty much where we're at. Actually, Jeff's pretty good. He buys sushi for me, actually, which is wicked.
Does he? Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah,
that's,
it's nice.
You're in a good place there.
It feels good. No, it's cool, you know. I just, yeah, they're wicked, and I really like them, and I really like that Jeff's just like, he's just one of them people that he's just given me the space, and he's just, what he's doing is basically nurturing what I'm doing, and that just feels incredibly special and rare. Yeah, I think I'll probably be eternally grateful for the way that he's approached what I'm doing and sort of trusting me and stepping back and then stepping in occasionally and just, yeah, you go through the last year, it's like, it's been pretty hectic and weird and shit. So you kind of go through enough stuff that you go, well, you've seen me at my absolute worst. We've all had explosive arguments in WhatsApp groups. And now it's like, now we can sort of sit and have a pint and talk about stuff. And yeah, it's cool. You just build something and it's a different dynamic. And then it's still work and it's still everything else. But yeah, it's great. It's I wouldn't really want for anything else.
As you're writing new material, do you always just keep it to yourself until you consider that it's final and it's done? Or are you learning to kind of enjoy having like an extra ear just to say, hey, can you just check this? What do you think of this? And I mean, when you were making the first record, for example, I don't know whether that was there or not, whether you were working on that on your own, but is it a slightly different dynamic to be able to just sort of bounce ideas off somebody, check in with somebody, just ask what they think? Or are you still very much like, when it's done, I'll share it with somebody, but right now this is my thing?
I'm a bit of both with this one. I've shared bits and pieces. I got lots on the go. The ones that I'm thinking, I could see that making it, it's not quite there, but I could see it making it, I'll demo them and send them to Jeff, or sometimes Claire, my management, and just go, what do you reckon to that? What's your gut instinct on this? And it'll just be a little MP3, and it'll be nothing spectacular about it. It'll just be the bare bones of it. And that's normally a good gauge, because with Jeff, it'll be like a one word answer, like, great.
Or like, monosyllabic feedback.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good.
Good track.
Or like it.
Yeah, and that's when, and I'll take that absolutely face value, because he's got no, you know what I mean? Like, you could go, not sure. You know what I mean? And I would take that as exactly as it is as well. And Claire's good as well. You know, she'll say, oh, I like this, or this is good, or this has got a good feel. I remembered that. That's a good one. I think sometimes you share it. I sometimes share stuff with my sister and she'll be like, oh, I woke up with that in my head. And I'd be like, oh, that's good. But yeah, I'm getting better at it. I don't know. But then there's some stuff that I do feel solid on, but I'm like, not yet.
Not ready yet.
Yeah.
Not for your ears.
It's weird. I think it's because I almost want to present it. I'm getting to that point now where I want to present it as the finished article almost, or like almost the finished article. So I just think, because I just want the best reaction. So I kind of go, which is good and bad, because it means that you throw less demos around. But I just get protective. Mm. And hopefully what's happening is that the standard of things is going up, hopefully. The way I approach songwriting and the way I want to do it, hopefully I'm learning and things are getting slightly better. So maybe there's an element of that as well, where I'm getting a bit more conscious of what I show people because of that. I don't know.
You mentioned it earlier, like the last 18 months have been weird and shit and bizarre and any number of words along those lines. Effectively, you were kind of on the eve, you were getting everything ready to release a debut album in sort of spring 2020. The album then came out in the summer. But what are your reflections now? Like, it must feel slightly surreal thinking of the last 18 months. I mean, how do you think you'll reflect on this period?
Yeah, I think surreal is the word, really. I think it felt slightly surreal for everyone. It will always be a weird one. It'll be memorable. I'll be like, well, the first time I put a record out was when the collapse of music happened. And we worked up from there. You know, like the worst moment in musical history is when we arrived. You know, so it's memorable. Yeah, it is surreal, and it's a mix, really. What I'm looking forward to, fingers crossed and touch wood and all the rest of it, that tours will happen later in the year. And I want to reclaim that first album back, because if I'm being honest right now, I feel very sad about it still, because it's amazing that it got out and we did what we did and all the rest of it. But it happened without me is what I felt like. And I want to reclaim it and perform it and feel it and live it like every artist kind of needed to with their work. I mean, I think any artist that put out a record last year and had intention of touring it or whatever, I think we all feel the same. We all feel a bit like that was the lost thing, that, you know, and the feedback loop wasn't there really. I mean, you had things like Six Music and radio and socials where it was amazing because there was a real lifeline. You'd get DJs playing stuff. I'd hear Iggy Pop playing songs back to back, or Mark Riley or Lauren Laverne, or, you know, and you'd go, shit, it's doing well. Mm. Like, I know the world's falling apart, but my record's doing okay. And that's just such a strange one.
I can imagine for some people, like you're saying there, you felt a little bit sort of almost robbed of that moment, because it's less... Those things you just mentioned are great, but they're not as tangible as basically playing a gig in March to a certain amount of people and then knowing that your album has been so well received that you're playing to 10 times that amount of people in November of that year or whatever. And that's a real thing, and the energy that gives you in terms of getting in front of people. So it's great to hear that you kind of haven't entirely moved on from that, because I'm sure some of those artists that went through the same experience as you did last year perhaps just are saying, okay, well, it's gone. That moment's gone. Like, I'll move on or whatever. But yeah, I'm glad to hear that you still want to kind of get some of that energy out there.
I think I totally understand. If there are artists that have gone, that album didn't happen, therefore we're just pulling it up by the roots and going for another thing, I completely respect and understand that. And there's maybe a little part of me that would like to do that, I guess. Being like at the studio today and I'm working on the next album, I'm kind of doing it in my own way. But also I just sort of feel sad. Yeah, I would feel sad if I did that in a way, because I go, but then my lasting memory of my debut is just this kind of sad, oh, feeling. And I just want to go, oh, fuck that. No, I want to reclaim it. It's like a bad relationship where you have to like go visit the places that you used to go together. You know, like,
oh god, this is sounding traumatic now.
You used to go to like this nice place together, and then it's like a year after the breakup and you go, no, I must go back and have a good time because fuck him.
yeah, you know, yeah, what I mean? Totally. You just mentioned a few of the people that picked up your music and played it and shared it and loved it. Iggy Pop, for example. What a thrill to hear Iggy Pop talking about your music, I imagine. What was that like?
Oh man, just surreal, and like surreal in a very good way. Yeah, it's wicked. Just, I mean, it's Iggy fucking Pop. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
I'd just be like, clipping. I'd take that clip and I'd have it on the desktop of my computer every morning when I opened it up to work on new music. I'd be like, just going to give myself a little boost of just Iggy telling me how great I am.
Yeah. Oh, no, incredible. And it feels very genuine as well, because you kind of go, well, this is someone who ain't going to play what they don't want to play, or isn't going to talk. You know what I mean? They've got nothing to gain from getting behind an artist like me if they didn't want to. So it feels incredibly genuine and incredibly just, yeah, well, cool. Very cool. Yeah.
I'm imagining Iggy Pop the first time he's heard your music. This is me just pure imagining. Iggy Pop hears Billy No Mates for the first time. He's on his Miami beachfront. The doors are open to the beach. He's got his top off. He's shimmying across his living room floor as he's listening to your music. That's what I reckon happened.
I'm pretty sure that's factual, and that will go down as fact.
Yeah, exactly. That's what happened. That's definitely what happened. When it comes to the live thing, I mean, you've got some brilliant shows booked later in the year that, fingers crossed, do happen. Things like End of the Road Festival and Visions Festival, Manchester Psych Fest, like some great stuff. The time in between when you haven't been able to go out and play that album and your music generally, has it offered you a chance to do a bit of a reset on thinking what you want to do when it comes to performing, or will you continue with kind of plan A, as so to speak?
It's weird because I feel like I feel like I should say yes, I've really thought about it and it's going to be a bonanza. Except the thing is, I kind of haven't, because the format that it was supposed to be is still what it's supposed to be. Do you know what I mean? It's still supposed to be a contemporary take on performance, and I didn't want to overthink that or think, you know, I get it a few times where people have been like, have you got a band yet, are you going to get a drummer at least, are you going to get a live drummer at least? It's like, well, no. And you wouldn't say that to an R&B or hip-hop artist, you know, you wouldn't. And it's a weird realm, because I understand the confusion of like, well, I'm hearing a guitar but there's not a guitarist, and it's like, yeah, I still kind of want to do that.
Where do you think that comes from? People thinking like that success means adding more people to the formula. Do you think that's kind of just a perception thing?
I don't know. I think sometimes, I might be wrong, but the feeling I get is like, it's not real. It's not real music because the musicians aren't there. But it's like, well, it's all real. It's all real. It's all, most of it played by me. It's all written by me. And I don't know, you know, it's a weird one. I don't know.
Nobody was saying that about Kanye West at Glastonbury when he just did it on his own, were they?
No, and there's something about as well, like, I don't know, I kind of like that. I mean, I refer to him all the time, but, you know, the first time that I saw the Sleeve of Mods and I was going, oh, well, this is samples of real instruments, which is what hip-hop has done forever, but just in a different context. And it was like, well, it's just that again, in a way. And there's just something about having the space. And I mean, I've just started rehearsing, actually. I'm probably a bit late off the mark, but I've been very cautious because I've had periods of time where I've really gone for it and then it's all been cancelled. So I'm a bit scarred by it. So I've been a bit cautious about where I put my energy, because I want the energy to go on the record as well. So I've been a bit, but I have started, and I'm trying not to overthink it. I think the simplicity of it still works and still stands. And there may be a time where that changes, but it hasn't kind of lived this life out yet. So I'm kind of like, well, no, because I felt like it was doing something a little bit different. And so it needs to still do that. Yeah. And the people that it trips up, like, good.
yeah, exactly. And there's plenty of time to get a gospel choir in, isn't there?
Oh, of course. That is absolutely happening.
Album 4.
Yeah.
You did still manage to do a few things that the past 18 months that were really great in terms of live. Like, I before we chatted today, I was watching back your performance for Jenny Beth from Savages works on a TV show called Echoes that some listeners might be aware of, but has amazing performances, gives a great space to artists to be able to share their music, much more kind of long form and interesting than a lot of British music television. And you were invited to go onto that, and your whole performance is on YouTube. People should go and check it out. What was the experience like of going to record that TV show?
It was great. Again, it was a little bit surreal because it was just as the lockdown had sort of lifted at the end of the summer, nipped on the Eurostar over to Paris, and it was all a bit masks and no audience and crews in masks and a bit tense. Because just those environments are, they have been. And it's intense anyway, because for me, it's like quite a big thing. Like these things are still kind of new to me and quite massive. Thrown like, you know, the whole corona thing on top, it's like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's pretty, I can imagine how sort of anxiety inducing that is.
Really. Oh, it's insane. Like you kind of are just holding it together and then thinking about your performance. That's how I felt. That all aside, once it's kind of up and rolling, it's incredible. I mean, it's like, it's Jenny Beth, and I think she's absolutely ace. Like, I love what she does and what she stands for. To be invited and to go and do it, it felt very, very cool and very, although it was weird because I remember coming back and telling everyone, being like, yeah, I haven't seen anyone for like about 6 or 7 months at this point. And, the first time I go and see people, I go and sit under some lights and have a conversation with Jenny Beth, Fontaines DC, and Amel, who's an amazing singer-songwriter, and it's filmed. So I felt like I come across so bad because, you know, when you like when we first came out and we're all like learning to speak again.
Yeah, yeah. And social like, contact.
And basic conversations like are just still a little bit hard to begin with. And then, so the first experience of that is for me was like that. So I'm a bit like, hi, guys. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've tried to come here and be all badass. And I'm like, well, it's just really nice to be out. Like,
so the only person I've spoken to in 8 months is the local shopkeeper.
Literally, it's been me and that person down the post office for a long time. And now this is, what's this? It was good.
Like, this is new. This is real life nuanced discussion. And like, I thought that's a thing from the olden times, isn't like, it? We've got Twitter now and TikTok. We don't need that.
Oh, I mean, we're talking about art and poetry and art history, and I'm just sat there like, oh my god, what has happened? Like, how am I here?
Sounds amazing, though. What a great experience.
It was. I really, really enjoyed myself, and I'm so, so thrilled that they asked me to go. It was amazing.
I don't normally look at the YouTube comments on videos, but I was watching a performance from Echoes and couldn't help but notice that somebody had said that they were loving it, but that they said that they worked on a crane. And I just thought that was great because I loved the idea of somebody watching you on YouTube whilst being on a giant crane doing some kind of like construction project. A little bit dangerous, right, but
I'm gonna be honest.
I love the idea of that.
I'm going to be honest. I do not endorse that.
For health and safety reasons, absolutely not.
I do not encourage that. Why are you watching me while you're on a crane? Honest to God, wait till you get home.
He's probably just waiting for some bricks or something, you know?
Yeah, I just, oh no. Like, well chuffed you watch me, but operate the crane,
innit? Yeah, exactly. Can you please concentrate on what you're doing?
Yeah.
I don't know whether they were doing it at the same time or whether they just felt like that was just, you know, I work with cranes. Maybe that's just an important bit of information to add on to the fact that they enjoyed it.
But also, we don't know whether he's talking about the birds.
Could well be working in a nature reserve, not a big housing development, for example.
He might have just been sat there feeding them, watching it. We don't know.
That's a lot safer. Do you endorse that?
Yes. Yes. That's got my stamp of approval. Get the birds involved.
In terms of music fandom, your own kind of love of music, like I've read and heard in the past that you are a big fan of Northern Soul music and yeah. Love like 80s pop and things like that. Yeah, just tracing things a little bit further back in terms of the music that you first fell in love with and stuff you still consider to be like your absolute kind of center of the record collection, things that are just, you know, precious to you. What kind of music are we talking about there?
It's really varied, but yeah, I go back to Northern Soul Records because the energy is just so captured in them, and I love that. I mean, I like some old punk records. I think that does the same thing, but Northern Soul, it was kind of that melodic energy, and I really relate and feel that. But also, yeah, like 80s pop, and do you know what? I was listening, not very cool, but I was listening to Greatest Hits Radio through the park the other day.
Excellent.
And they were doing like the archive of like Simple Minds stuff. It's belting. Like, I think their album, like, I can't remember what their hit, well, real hit one was, but they went through it all and I was like, every track is wicked. Yeah, I just kind of went back and I was like, that's bloody good. Like, it's got Alive and, I think it's got Alive and Kicking and Don't You Forget About Me. And they wrote really, really well. But yeah, I just, you know, anything kind of really real with energy and feeling. But I also have a real love for Americana music. That was really central growing up. My dad was always listening to Americana records, and people I hung around with at the time were into Americana stuff. Yeah, and I remember, like, yeah, a lot of James Taylor and John Denver. I mentioned John Denver a few times, and it's so far removed from Billy No Mates, but I do have a love for it, though.
We've touched on it a little bit about the plans for the rest of the year, which will be getting out there and playing some gigs, some great stuff booked, and obviously you're there in the studio kind of working on stuff now. But touch wood, what are your, you know, without any further setbacks, which we're all hoping that, you know, the rest of the year can go without more of those, what are you looking forward to? What are your kind of hopes in terms of like sharing some of that new music that you're working on?
I'd really hope to finish the record and, yeah, maybe share it towards the end, share something from it towards the end of the year, and have it kind of, there's no solid dates, but in the ether next year. Yeah, so that's kind of the broad goal. I say broad, any artist will know at the moment with the way that press implants have got cues and stuff, you kind of have to narrow it down a bit and go, we need to roughly know when, because there's quite a, yeah, it's quite a cue.
So a lot of listeners won't be aware of this, but basically when the pandemic obviously came along and everybody thought, hang on, we just want to see what's going on with this, like perhaps this record we're going to release, we'll just hang on for a minute, just see when the picture becomes clearer. And what you've got now is this enormous queue of people that want to obviously get vinyl made to accompany when they release stuff, still hugely important in terms of getting some income in when you're, you know, releasing music, getting a physical product out there. But there's a massive backlog. There's basically not enough factories, you know, producing vinyl. And so what's the wait time, like 8-9 months or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like, I think we found one that's saying roughly 5 or 6, but yeah, so once you have that in your head, you go, well, even when you're talking about next year, you still have to be mindful of when those masters are done. And yeah, so the freedom's kind of taken, it's not so much like I wish I was the artist, it's just like, it's done when I say it's done. Like, no, it's done when you need to get it in. You know,
you need to book a slot now, even though it's not finished.
In a weird way, yeah. Like, I think everyone's kind of gone into massively over planning a bit, because it's kind of had to be that way to make things happen, just because of the way the world is.
And in the meantime, we all just need to build like a pop-up vinyl factory, because they're easy to do.
Yes.
And just to sort of meet the demand in the next 18 months as people start releasing music again.
Absolutely. That now is, you know, weirdly now would probably be the time to set up a vinyl factory.
Yeah, especially in the UK, so you didn't have to mess with all of the Brexit hurdles, should we call them?
I don't know the ins and outs, but I know it's a bit of a nightmare. Yeah,
yeah, it's difficult to get stock back from Europe and stuff without, you know, obviously having to all the new regulations and stuff. But I mean, that sounds exciting. And then on top of that, hopefully playing some shows before the year is end, before it's gone. Like, we, you know,
yeah,
let's keep our fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. There's a UK tour booked. A lot of it's sold out as well, which is great. Yeah, from October, and then maybe doing some appearances elsewhere at the end of the year on other kind of exciting things. So yeah, just fingers crossed things can run, because it's so tiring when they don't.
Final question. What would you consider if, you know, when gigs come back and you can get out there and play them, what, if you could just have one if it was only one gig that got to happen in almost like normal life, what's almost like, what's the hometown gig or the most similar equivalent that you were just like, I just want to play that show because that would be amazing? Is there anything like that in your mind?
I actually can't say the one that I'm thinking of because it's sort of not announced yet, but there is one.
Wembley Stadium.
It's not Wembley Stadium, but it would be quite a pinnacle moment. I think, yeah, you know, like I've got a show, sold out show booked at just in the back of Rough Trade in Bristol. And I just feel like that would be great to do because it's just, especially being here, it's a shop that, you know, I walk past it every day now and see people in masks and say hello. And the idea of kind of just, it's just anywhere on that tour list. Oh, I tell you what, it looks interesting. I'm doing a matinee show in Huddersfield Library on a Sunday, okay, on a Sunday afternoon.
Down with that.
Yeah. Initially I saw it and was like, what the hell? In all honesty. Who's done this? And then I saw the whole Loud in Libraries thing and thought, oh no, actually this looks dead cool. And actually it is dead cool. Like they have loads of artists. And I was like, oh, a library. I really like the idea of it. I'm not slack. So I slagged it off. I didn't mean it.
But now that you're researching, you're like, I'm thoroughly into this.
No, now I think it's dead cool. Well, just interesting places where there aren't maybe venues seem pretty interesting. Because especially for what I do, you don't necessarily need a venue, you just need a space. So I think that makes it kind of interesting.
To find previous episodes of Midnight Chats, simply search your podcast app. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to keep up as they're published every week at midnight. For more information on the music magazine that makes this series, visit loudandquiet.com.
Anyway, good night.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story. One passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.